On Tech News Today, Steve Jobs' wife tried to kill the new Steve Jobs movie. NASA posts every photo ever taken on the moon with new high-res scans. And we'll show you Doom running natively on a smartwatch. It's all coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, October 5th, 2015. This episode is brought to you by Gazelle. Would you like to get cash for your old iPhone? Gazelle makes it easy. Shipping is free and the payment is fast. What's your iPhone worth? Find out at gazelle.com. And by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/TNT to apply for a loan now. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. My name is Mike Elgin, and our co-anchor today is the Next Web reporter, Lauren Hawkinson. Hey, Lauren, what's going on?
Hi, Mike. Just enjoying this wonderful October sunshine. What about you?
Same thing. It's sunny and lovely here as well. Now, you wrote a really sunny piece recently about Disney research. Now, they've been in the news a lot lately. They've been doing some really interesting things. And almost all of their technology involves stuff that happens with kids, like kids' culture that they're bringing into the sort of digital age. And in this case, they're turning coloring books into 3D characters while retaining the crayon that's been drawn on those characters. Can you talk about this this story you wrote?
Yeah, so the scientists, some of the scientists affiliated with Disney's research labs, I believe they were based in Berlin, have created a novel way to basically bring your coloring book to life. What they've done is they've actually mapped every single square inch of a design to a specific pixel in a 3D model. So as you're coloring, if you hold your tablet up, it changes in real time. The colors and the textures change in real time to basically bring your character to life.
This just seems brilliant. It seems absolutely brilliant because it's just a fun way to sort of like make coloring like, and of course, you could also imagine that they could create entire stories. And, you know, once you color your character, then you have this entire movie, basically an animated movie mm-hmm. with your character colored the way you colored it. This is really great. And of course, kids color. But nowadays, there's a fad of adults getting into coloring and coloring books. So they might be into this as well. But this is just so cool.
I know, right? I mean, it makes total sense that Disney would embark on this kind of research. And it's really created a lot of novel opportunities, you know, that are applicable outside of the coloring book. You know, the way that they've actually been able to account for camera bending to make sure that because paper isn't a flat surface, you can bend it and the character will stay on the page, and just making sure that everything works like in real time. They really put a lot of great tech into this, but it's kind of that extra magic, you know, seeing the character dance right on the coloring book and sort of giving kids and adults, let's be real, an opportunity to interact with something they just created is pretty awesome.
Absolutely. And you can read Lauren's story at thenextweb.com. Let's jump into the regular news. Twitter co-founder and former CEO Jack Dorsey just got a new job, CEO of Twitter. Kurt Wagner is a reporter for Recode and joins us now. Welcome to the show, Kurt.
Hey, Mike. It's a new job and an old job all wrapped into one.
It's more than that. It's a new job that he got fired from and then got the job again. That's a good one. Now, you wrote that the board decided this last Wednesday when Recode first reported the possibility that he was the front runner for the job. Why did they wait 5 days, do you think?
Well, I think that they were trying to figure out some logistical things, partly what is Adam Bain going to do or what was Adam Bain going to do. So for those who don't know, Adam Bain has been Twitter's longtime head of revenue, the guy responsible for making all the money at the company. And he does a really good job and he's really well liked, and people internally just can't say enough good things about him. He got a promotion today. He's now the COO of Twitter. Exactly what that means is, you know, a little bit unclear because they didn't lay out exactly his full job responsibilities this morning. But I think what they were trying to do is, you know, once they decided that Jack was going to run the show, I think it just, you know, it takes a couple days for them to figure out what are other people going to do? How are we going to have this, you know, frame this announcement, all that kind of stuff. And they didn't decide until last Wednesday. And so then, you know, it takes a couple days and then you got the weekend and here we are first thing Monday morning. So I don't think it was super crazy that they waited a few days, but people were very impatient. So you can imagine that everyone was anxious to get an answer.
So, Kurt, to my knowledge, it seems like Jack has always been sort of the king of the hill when you're talking about Twitter's CEO watch. He was really always at the top. A lot of people were reporting that they were really thinking about him long term. I know that Bain's name was in a couple times and sort of mystery outsiders, as it were. But Jack really never left that field. And it seems that, you know, he's gotten the job now. What does the board see in Jack Dorsey? And why is he ultimately the fit for CEO at Twitter right now?
Well, you could see we had a profile on Friday about Jack, and we talked to a ton of people about why they think that he can run two companies. And it was actually we heard some stuff this morning from Bain and Noto and Peter Curry, who's one of the board members, and even Ev Williams posted a Medium post. And it was kind of interesting because all of what they were saying aligned with a lot of what the people we spoke to had also said, which was that, you know, Jack has been thinking about the Twitter product for longer than anybody. He's the co-founder, of course. And so if there's anyone who kind of has a vision for where this company is going, it's going to be Jack. And then the other big thing that a couple people pointed out was that he has what is, you know, referred to as the moral authority to make massive changes at Twitter. So if they want to get rid of the 140 character limit, which we reported last week they're considering doing, you know, that decision is a big one, and it has to come from someone with the moral authority to make that. And that, in this case, would be Jack. So I think that those combinations of the way he thinks about the product and the reputation and the respect he has to make the big changes needed were the combination that ultimately led them to pick Jack to run the show.
There's some other changes, but I don't think we know exactly what happened to CFO Anthony Noto, who's, I think he was a recent hire, wasn't he? What's going on with Anthony? Do we know?
So as far as I know, Anthony is still going to be CFO. He seems to be doing a relatively good job. I mean, people have said positive things about him. I think the only thing that is somewhat unclear is who he's going to report to. I assume he's reporting directly to Jack, because typically the CFO would report right to the CEO. But at the same time, now that Adam Bain is the COO, you know, it could be that Anthony Noto is reporting to Bain. That's something that they didn't explicitly say and that we haven't yet unearthed, I guess, so far this morning. But otherwise, I don't really see there being a big change with what he's been doing. I know that he's kind of a little bit more, I've heard that he's a little bit more hands-on than the typical CFO. He's not just simply sitting there doing the books, but he's actually contributing to, you know, the future of the company and kind of like looking at where things are going. So I think in that way, he's more involved than maybe the traditional CFO might be. But yeah, I don't think a lot has changed for him.
Kurt Wagner is at recode.net, and you can follow him on Twitter at KurtWagner8. You can also follow the new, you know, the new and old CEO on Twitter. He's, unlike some of the board, actually uses it. Kurt Wagner, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
All right. More news coming right up, including Steve Jobs news. But first, I want to talk about Gazelle, one of our sponsors today. Of course, Gazelle is the best place to both sell and buy a smartphone or a tablet. The reason is that it lets you upgrade more quickly and get you better phone for the amount of money you're going to be spending. So, for example, if you want to upgrade to the new iPhone and you've got an older iPhone, sell it to Gazelle and buy your new one from Gazelle. And you'll just like it'll barely cost you anything at all, because they'll subsidize it and then give you a lower price than you can get at the AT&T store. And here's the number for you, 30. That's how many days that they will honor the price that you put in right now. So if you go to gazelle.com, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com, and you go through the process, you simply indicate what phone it is, which carrier it's on, what the condition is, whether it's broken, good, or flawless, they'll give you a price. That price will be locked in, and no matter what happens to the actual value of the phone, they will honor that for 30 days. That means 30 days from now, if somebody goes in there and puts in a price, it may be lower because, of course, the value of phones is always declining, but yours will still be higher. So you always want to go in there and lock in the price. It's also a great idea just to do a check, just find out what your old device is worth. And, of course, you know, Jerry Seinfeld has a great routine that says that, you know, once something goes in the garage, it's never coming out of that. It's never coming back in the house. So if you got a phone in a drawer or something, and think that someday you might use it or somebody might use it, I hate to break it to you, but that ain't going to happen. Sell it to Gazelle and get some money for it and apply that to your next purchase. Trade in your used phone and electronics for cash. Visit gazelle.com today. And we thank Gazelle for their support of Tech News Today. Facebook is working on a long-term effort to relay internet connectivity via drones or Facebook-built satellites to parts of the planet that currently don't have such access. But now they're not waiting, and they're working on a faster idea. Owen Williams writes for The Next Web and joins us to talk about it. Welcome to the show, Owen.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing great. I feel a little uncomfortable being surrounded by all these Next Web people. It's a little uncomfortable, but I'll muddle through. Now, what is Facebook planning for Africa here?
It's really interesting, actually, because they originally started out planning to have their own satellites and, you know, started prototyping them and everything. And then I think they realized that it's quite an expensive job. So they announced that they're working with an existing company called Eutelsat, which essentially means they're going to rent a certain amount of bandwidth on the satellite. And they're saying as part of this partnership, they're actually going to kind of deliver direct-to-user internet access, which means kind of, as far as I can tell, it means they're going to beam the internet directly down to people using apparently off-the-shelf hardware, which, you know, isn't that common. But I can imagine that it'll kind of bring internet to a lot of regions a lot quicker than Facebook building its own hardware. You know, that's a lot longer kind of time to you know, get to market. So it's really interesting because they say they'll deliver it in the second half of 2016, which is not that far away when you think about how long these kind of places have been waiting to get internet access.
Hello, total stranger I don't know and have no affiliation to whatsoever.
Fancy seeing you.
Fancy seeing you here too. Which parts of Africa are actually going to be served by Facebook's initiative?
So they did a little map, and it was a little bit vague, but it looked like kind of Central and South Africa was the most coverage area. And it says that they're specifically focusing on rural areas. So really those areas that have no way of getting internet any other way. They're not looking at areas that already have existing mobile infrastructure. They're not looking at areas that have, you know, broadband access of any description. They're really looking for those people that are in villages that have no sense of ever hoping to get someone to dig a wire out to them or something like that. So it's really quite cool. There are some, you know, legitimate concerns about Facebook delivering only part of the internet. And on one side of the fence, it's like, you know, that is kind of shady that, you know, not everybody can be on board with this. But on the other side of it, it's like these people won't be online otherwise. So it's kind of compelling in that regard.
Now, of course, in India, Facebook got in a lot of trouble because the internet.org initiative that wanted to provide subsidized or free internet connectivity to Indians basically said, okay, here's the deal. You get free access, but here are the sites that you can go to. And the net neutrality activists there screamed bloody murder. They were right about it. I mean, basically, they were Facebook was choosing which websites, which destinations would be available and which wouldn't, and so this, if I'm going to take the maximum negative view of this, it seems like they grabbed their ball and went to a place where that nobody would complain. You know, is that really happening? Do we know what the rules are going to be for this access? Will they have to use Facebook, for example?
Yeah. So the way that internet.org works is it's like this pre-selected set of sites. And, you know, initially when Facebook launched the service, it was kind of under this like disguise of like, oh yeah, we have Facebook, but don't worry, there's also Wikipedia. So it's not bias, you know, to save face. But after the whole India kind of thing, they released open specification for how other companies can get on it. They kind of detailed, you know, what the steps are to get approved. And I don't think it's as black and white as they're making out, because if it was, I think Twitter would, you know, be embracing it already. But they are making steps towards, I guess, opening it up a lot more. And, you know, internet.org is technically separate from Facebook. It is a not-for-profit. But I think, you know, we should be pushing them for being more clear about, like, okay, why is Twitter not on this, or why is, you know, any competing service not available? And I understand the limitations of, you know, delivering the whole internet via satellite to a lot of people is probably very difficult. But, you know, they need to be clear about what's included and what's not included and why, basically. You know, but it's still very cool that they're putting these people online. You know, in the UN's report earlier this year, they said that internet connectivity around the world kind of rate is slowing because these areas just there's no investment. And so things like this are really pushing that forward now, which is incredible, really.
Owen, do you have any insight or any kind of look into what the local ecosystem is right now for internet? I know you just said the UN has really been pushing to bring internet to these areas. Is there anyone out there who's doing this right now that could possibly be squished under Facebook's involvement?
I haven't seen anything in particular. I mean, I didn't do any specific research into this area, but there have been smaller initiatives. I mean, there's the whole Google Project Loon thing, but that's a lot bigger, and I don't think they're focusing on that area. So I suspect there are some, kind of like in India, there were programs run by the mobile networks to do that kind of thing, but I think the people that Facebook is targeting with this satellite program are so remote that they're, you know, in these areas where I don't think there's any hope of them getting online anytime soon. So I can't say specifically if there are, but if they're providing satellite access, I'd say, you know, that's pretty far out there.
Well, I, for one, am extremely skeptical about this. And by that, I don't mean cynical regarding Facebook, but I mean skeptical regarding the idea that they'll actually deliver it. Yeah. Bill Gates announced Teledesic in the 90s. They launched a bunch of satellites. That never happened. Numerous people have announced things. Even Elon Musk has talked about announcing things. And I also personally would have loved a satellite data connection at various times in my life, but it's super expensive. Mm. I mean, connecting via existing satellite networks to the internet right now is just, I mean, it's just mind-blowingly expensive. So I don't know what has happened or what's going to happen in the next year that suddenly Facebook and this their partner here are going to be able to successfully provide it at a reasonable cost so that they can subsidize it and make it available for free. I'm going to go ahead and go out on a limb and say this isn't going to happen next year. May happen sometime.
I'm skeptical too because they say like off-the-shelf hardware, and I'm like, well, I've never really heard of delivering this directly to cell phones. You know, I come from New Zealand where very much so, like, we have very rural places that can't get online. That's why Google tested the Project Loon in New Zealand. And so hearing, like, oh, satellite internet will solve the problems, I'm kind of like, so I can understand where you're coming from there. It'll be interesting, and I think we should definitely chase, you know, these guys to actually, you know, what do you mean exactly by direct-to-user internet? Because it's very hard to fathom it suddenly working.
I got news for you, Owen. They didn't decide to go to New Zealand because New Zealand has areas unconnected. They decided to go to New Zealand because the team wanted to spend some time in New Zealand.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a good reason to go to New Zealand too, right?
Who
doesn't?
Exactly. In other news, we're going to be doing the show from New Zealand for the next 6 months. Owen Williams is at thenextweb.com and on Twitter at OW. Thanks, Owen, for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right.
See you again.
Bye-bye. You may know Elon Musk. You may have heard of him. As the founder of and CEO of Tesla, or maybe the founder and CEO of SpaceX, but he's also got a solar power business called Solar City, where he's the chairman of the board and co-founder. Well, now the company has announced a big solar breakthrough. Graham Templeton is a freelance writer who wrote about Solar City for Extreme Tech and joins us now. Hey, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me on. And just to be clear, I'm definitely not from the next web.
Okay, darn it. Well, we tried to get the whole team here today. They're all in New Zealand doing something. I don't know what's going on. Well, the breakthrough in question is a major one in the world of solar power, which is related to cost. Of course, the whole problem with solar is it's too expensive. This is in this case, it's the cost of producing the power itself. What did they announce exactly, Graham?
Well, it shows the power of the Elon Musk hype machine, because what they announced is not all that different from things that have been announced in the past. Just, you know, an iterative drop in price per watt and raise in power efficiency, but it could be quite an important one. So what they've announced is they've hit for residential or rooftop solar 22.5% efficiency. That means that 22.5% of the energy that's falling on the panel is being converted into electricity. Now that's kind of a modest step up from the prior best, which was around 21.5%. The difference is going to be price. And the big thing that SolarCity has announced is 55 cents per watt, which, again, seems like a bit of a modest step down from the prior best, which was somewhere a little less than 60 cents per watt. But the sheer number of watts that are being consumed these days, I mean, it adds up quickly. And with certain federal tax subsidies, you know, possibly in danger over the next couple of years, it's going to be important to keep those costs not just low, but continuing to drop, because those costs might actually go up due to, you know, other political developments.
So, Graham, my parents live in sunny Sacramento, California, which has long been a target for solar programs. And they've been really hesitant to do it because the expense and also because they're unsure, you know, whether or not by the time that they put up their solar panels, they'll already have missed out on like the new technology that will, you know, save them even more money later on. It's kind of like this weird chicken and egg problem that they have. Is anything that SolarCity announced today going to push them over the edge? Is it going to push anybody who's really been thinking about solar into it? Or is it just sort of another new iterative technology, like you said?
Well, right now, this particular announcement is just an iterative update of that kind. SolarCity has talked in the past about having some sort of service-based setup where you would pay a fee per time, and you would keep having up-to-date panels. The upside to the company is they would keep getting more and more excess power generated, which they could then sell and, you know, hypothetically make more profit. But that was not that sort of thing was not really on display in this announcement. The biggest thing right now is the fact that people believe that Elon Musk is capable of delivering on these promises. When other people make similar promises, you know, people tend to roll their eyes a little bit when Elon Musk says it. It seems a little more believable. He has sort of a concrete plan to achieve these cost goals. They want to build. So for Tesla, they're pioneering this thing called the Gigafactory to make, you know, enormous numbers of batteries, which are needed for their cars. In this case, they want to build a facility in Buffalo called Riverbend, which will be able to put out about 10,000 panels a day at peak capacity, or about a gigawatt of capacity a year, which is enormous. And if they can hit those, then they absolutely will revolutionize the solar market. And so, again, it just comes down to how much do people believe that Elon Musk or SolarCity is going to be able to deliver on this. And just, you know, because of the profile, the deserved profile that Elon Musk and SolarCity have, people are giving it more attention than they would if anyone else made the exact same announcement.
SolarCity brags about technology called Tri-X technology. What is that?
Basically, it's just a type of photovoltaic cell that uses N-type crystals as opposed to P-type. That's probably the biggest difference. And the number one thing that allows is it can run hotter without losing efficiency. But the downside is it's more expensive and difficult to produce. So again, it comes down to, do you believe that this Riverbend facility and SpaceX are going to be able to produce this higher quality or higher efficiency solar cell cheaply enough for people to be able to consume it on the mass market? And so with these N-type crystals, which they claim to have mastered by acquiring a company called Silevo and their technology, they're saying that this is going to be a tackleable problem.
Well, I can't wait for the solar-powered rockets, solar-powered Teslas, and all the rest. That's going to be really cool. Graham Templeton is at grahamtempleton.com and on Twitter at, you guessed it, Graham Templeton. Graham, thanks for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, bye-bye. The latest Steve Jobs movie, which is entitled Steve Jobs, opens Friday. Today, the Wall Street Journal is reporting that Jobs' wife, Lorene Powell Jobs, a few other friends of Steve, tried to kill the movie through lobbying. They haven't seen it yet, but screenwriter Aaron Sorkin is notorious for his contempt of tech titans. His heroes tend to be politicians and political reporters, and his takedown of Mark Zuckerberg, called The Social Network, was packed with creative license designed to vilify Zuck. In the HBO TV series The Newsroom, the good guy journalists are confronted by a super evil Jeff Bezos-type character, so they have good reason to believe that the Steve Jobs in this movie will be an evil, rotten bastard.
Yeah, Aaron Sorkin is really anti-technology and kind of always has been. I remember there was actually an episode in the newsroom that was very early on, which had to do with like the inefficiency of email. And he created like this convoluted email system that allowed one of the bumbling women that also populated that show to accidentally send an email of her declaration of her past for the news anchor. So I'm not surprised. He's not a fan of technology at all.
And of course, two people who know Steve Jobs very well, Andy Hertzfeld and Steve Wozniak, and both of whom were famously abused by Steve Jobs directly, thought it was a great movie. So it sounds like he's going to be vilified. Well, yeah. In other news, Interbrand has come out with its annual report listing the world's most valuable brands. And as you might guess, Apple is by far the most valuable brand in the world, with Google coming in second place. In fact, 6 of the top 10 on the list and 28 out of the top 100 are tech brands. No other industry is so dominant on this list. So the complete top 10 list, in case you're curious, is number 1, Apple, number 2, Google, followed by Coca-Cola, Microsoft, IBM, Toyota, Samsung, GE, for crying out loud, McDonald's, and Amazon. That's pretty good for Amazon. Of course, Facebook made a big jump from, like, I don't know, something like 23 to like 20, or 28 to 23, something like that. So Facebook is rising fast. But still, Apple's brand is kind of pulling away from Google there. And I'm also surprised by the popularity of the Microsoft brand. After all,
shout out to Coca-Cola, though. They were number one for, oh my gosh, as long as I can remember. They've been the number one brand for so long. And just to sort of see them still hanging in there at third, it's like, good job.
Yeah,
you did it.
Yeah, not bad. I mean, you know, we're talking about Steve Jobs, you know, changed the world, number one. You know, selling sugar water, number 3. That's not so bad, actually.
I love their sugar water.
Yes, good sugar water with caffeine. In follow-up news, it's official. As of Friday evening, Alphabet is now the official umbrella company for all the businesses formerly known as Google. Employees are no longer expected to live by the old slogan, don't be evil, but instead have a new code of conduct. Quote, employees of Alphabet and its subsidiaries and controlled affiliates should do the right thing. A little shout-out to filmmaker Spike Lee. And in addition to doing the right thing, they should follow the law. Good idea. Act honorably. Okay. And treat each other with respect. Well, you know, in some cultures, acting honorably and treating each other with respect are two different things, are mutually exclusive. But okay, fair enough. How, Lauren, is this different from Don't Be Evil? I guess, you know, Don't Be Evil sounds, I don't know, it's kind of religious in a way. Is this better? Is this a better slogan, or is this just a lot wordier?
To be honest with you, it kind of sounds like the Boy Scouts oath.
Yeah. Be prepared.
You know,
do
be
your
prepared.
Best.
all of those things. But I think that, you know, it just shows the fact that Alphabet's a different company and it doesn't necessarily have the same kind of control over its subsidiaries the way that Google had sort of unilateral control over every department. It's a little bit more of like helpful, friendly suggestions. And, you know, that's okay if that's what they want to do. But that SEC filing is actually particularly interesting just to see how the Alphabet was born.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I have the feeling that they went from the super memorable and pithy don't be evil to this kind of more long-winded thing, specifically because it was more long-winded. I mean, everybody, of course, in our business, journalists and headline writers have been taking them to task. Oh, this is evil. That's not evil. Is that supposed to be evil? You know, it's like making a mockery of their slogan. And so this one is so long and kind of nebulous that it's unlikely to capture the attention of people. And that's probably by design. They want a slogan that will sort of govern behavior, but also slip under the radar and can't be easily mocked.
I don't know, Mike. I'm waiting for that big headline that says, is Alphabet doing the right thing?
Exactly. Exactly. Spike Lee. We told you Thursday about a new app called People, spelled P-E-E-P-L-E, which let you rate and review human beings just like you can review restaurants on Yelp. The app got so much bad press that the founder of the company changed it so that nobody could be rated unless they're a member, and negative comments and reviews have been banned. And now I'm hearing that the app has vanished and nobody can find it. What a debacle. This is just incredible. Was this whole thing a publicity stunt, Lauren, or were they actually serious with the initial product?
No, you know, I think that they were actually serious with the initial product. Every once in a while, you'll see something like this come through, and the a measured amount of outrage will be drawn towards that product. And, you know, they did the backpedal. They don't want to completely destroy the brand that they've made. And clearly they think that there's some value in the idea that they have. But by and large, this is DOA, and they are probably better off just leaving this one alone. It's radioactive, I think.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Well, in product update news, Philips announced a new Hue Bridge today that adds support for HomeKit, which means it also supports Apple's Siri virtual assistant. Existing Hue Bridge customers get a discount, too. They can buy it for only $40, whereas new customers will be charged $60. You know, Lauren, my son already uses voice commands to control his lights. He has, I don't think he has Hue. He has another product, but then he controls it through Amazon Echo, through that virtual assistant, and it works great. You walk in, and you can either say turn the lights on, which case it'll turn all the lights, or you can specify individual lights, the left one, the right one, whatever. And it's pretty cool. So this will be great for people who have iPhones.
Yeah, I'm a terrible millennial, and I'm afraid of smart lights. So I'll wait on this one just yet.
You got a lot to learn about being a millennial. You should have gone to millennial training or something.
Not there for that.
Got more news coming up, but first let's talk about Prosper, one of our sponsors today. Prosper is the way to get a loan these days. It's a peer-to-peer lending marketplace. And what that means is that regular people borrow money from other regular people, and it benefits all the people. It's very, very cool. You just go to the site, and you enter in what you want to borrow money for. Let's say you want to pay off your credit cards. You want to buy a car. You want to fix your kitchen. Whatever it is, you sort of fill out the form. And then people who want to invest in your project come along, and they get a good return, a good solid return. The money comes directly out. There aren't any hidden fees, no mysteries about it. You're not penalized if you want to pay it off early. It's just a very, very cool thing. I mean, you know, we just talked about solar paneling and how the price is coming down. That is a great reason for a loan. If you have a small business or you want to have a solar-powered house, you can go to Prosper and get a loan. It's way better than getting a loan by other means. And you can check your low rate instantly, and it won't affect your good credit. So just go to prosper.com/TNT for that. And for up to $35,000 in your account in as few as 5 days, just go to prosper.com/TNT. Prosper.com/TNT. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Big number today, 8,400. That's how many photographs taken by astronauts during the moon missions NASA just uploaded to Flickr. The pictures are high resolution, that's 1,800 DPI, and include every single picture ever taken on the moon. Most of these photos were taken with medium format Hasselblad cameras. Medium format means that the actual size of the film was significantly larger than your average 35mm film, so they were able to go back and rescan these, and the results are absolutely breathtaking. And, of course, Lauren, this is a great resource for moon deniers, so they can go in there and they can find evidence that there's, you know, that the flag isn't waving right and all that stuff.
The only suggestion that I will make is don't access this Flickr photo collection at work, because you will lose so much valuable time staring at the moon.
Exactly. I mean, we've all seen pictures taken on the moon, but the pictures we've seen number in, you know, from 2 to 3 or 4 or 5 pictures. And this will show you, you know, 99.9% of these pictures you have never seen. It's just amazing to go through these. And some of them are like bad pictures. You know, you go to Google Photos and you look at your pictures and you're like, the one you post is awesome, but then you have all these other pictures where people are blinking and it's not right. The light isn't quite right. And there's a lot like that in this collection as well.
Yeah, but they're all beautiful. It's the moon. It's pretty exciting.
It's the moon. What are you going to say? What can you do? Well, the news you can lose, 2 Facebook developers in Israel with nothing better to do have ported the classic first-person shooter Doom to the Apple Watch. Note that their port is not an emulation. Doom is running natively on the watch. Of course, this requires Watch OS 2. Here comes the inevitable video. I need this, Lauren.
I love Doom. Love Doom so much.
Me too. And this is hard to control, but if it was easy, anybody could do it. So, of course, we're looking at an Apple Watch running Doom, and it's, you know, every once in a while a finger comes in and pokes at it to control it. Very, very cool. Yeah, that's not the Doom music, is it? No.
Yes, it is. That is the Doom theme.
That is
song.
The Doom music? Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, it's awesome. Wow. The game is awesome. It really is. It's a fun game. If you ever get the opportunity to play Doom,
and there's
do
a,
it.
Yeah, there's a school of thought that says it's not really a computer until it can run Doom.
So
congratulations, Apple Watch. You are a computer. Well, we got some feedback from some of our fans, including Nellum VR6, I think I'm saying that right, on Reddit, who commented on our story Friday that Adblock had been bought by an unknown company and started offering a place on its whitelist to any advertiser who paid them. And here is the comment. Quote, I switched to uBlock Origin. It's way better than either Adblock or Adblock Plus. I hadn't realized just how many ads Adblock and Adblock Plus were letting through until I installed uBlock Origin. Lauren, have you heard of uBlock Origin?
I have not, actually. I am a pretty loyal user to Adblock Plus, but I might have to check that out.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too. I don't really use ad blocking too much, but check it out anyway. Well, Bill Morgan in New Mexico sent email. He said, in response to Christina Warren's understandable desire to have an 8K display in spite of the lack of content for now and the inability of the human eye to see it for now, I propose the following. Make a little sticker similar to the old Intel Inside stickers of old. And the stickers can simply say 8K with no further explanation. Just put the sticker on your display and get on with your life. You are welcome. George Petriacini in Yonkers. I got that name wrong and I apologize for that, George. In New York, sent email that said, I wanted to comment on your comments about traffic speed and going with the flow in episode 1358. I can understand about going with the flow, but one thing that drivers will have to start taking into consideration eventually are the possibilities of self-driving cars or cars with driver assist functions. These vehicles, if properly programmed, will almost always obey traffic laws, and they have sensors and logs to prove why they did what they did. Somebody who gets into an accident with one of these vehicles won't have a leg to stand on in court. Also, I believe in some cars, intra-car communications will be starting soon. This also might leave a record of any traffic law infractions. I would suggest that people start getting stricter about how they drive. Thanks and love the show. Lauren, this is an interesting point. Basically, what he's saying is that with self-driving cars and all this other technology being thrown into cars, there'll be this sort of black box somewhere, probably in the cloud, of everything, even if you're not participating in the self-driving or assisted car movement. And that is an interesting, and it sounds to me like if he's correct, if this is really going to happen, everybody's going to start obeying the law. Like, what kind of a future is that?
It might be. It sounds a little bit like a Philip K. Dick technology jump in my mind. Did they have self-driving cars in Blade Runner? Was it the one that they had self-driving cars?
No, you're thinking of True Lies. Right, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Minority Report. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, this is the thing. I was actually reading something that somebody said this morning. I think it was on Twitter. And they were basically making the point that, I think it was a Wired journalist or something like that, that self-driving cars are literally the most inevitable technology that we are currently talking about these days. It's going to happen. It's absolutely going to happen. And the implications are just now becoming clear to us. So yeah, the science fiction movies and books that talked about this really got it right. I hope we don't have the Johnny Cab thing with the Alfred E. Newman character there driving the cab. That would be very disturbing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you can pull the head off, as Burke is saying, that'd be fine. You know, as long as you can damage it. All right, well, our TNT fan of the day is Gab PCD in France, who posted this picture on Twitter and said, Tech News Today is the best way to start a day. Thanks for your work. Look at that. Very nice. Couple of beverages and something. I don't know what that is. But anyway, very cool. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup or your breakfast and post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. And use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT so we can find it. Lauren, where can people follow your work and what are you working on these days?
Certainly. Well, people can follow my work. I'm the San Francisco reporter at The Next Web, so I'm reporting on everything San Francisco. Wow. For the website.
That's Isn't that like three quarters of what's happening in technology?
Yep, it is. You're right. But I report on select stories from San Francisco at thenextweb.com. You can follow me on Twitter at L. Hawkinson. And I also have a podcast called Nothing Matters, which you can subscribe to on iTunes or listen to on SoundCloud.
Now, everybody should know that Hawkinson can be spelled with an S-E-N at the end. This is an S-O-N at the end if you're looking for Lauren. So make sure you follow Lauren on Twitter at L Hawkinson. Lauren, thank you so much for co-anchoring today. I appreciate it.
As always, it's a pleasure, Mike.
All right, pleasure's all mine. Let us know what's on your mind. Send email to tnt at twit.tv or call 260-TNT-SHOW. That's 260-868-7469. You can subscribe to Tech News Today on Feedly. You can choose some other way to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. And you can watch us live every weekday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1700 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can follow us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV. And you can follow me at elgin.com. Also, don't miss our other news show, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific every single weeknight. And that is the Tech News Today. The show is produced by Jason Cleanthes and edited by Anthony Nielsen. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. See you tomorrow.